Right. So that's a little bit of a global picture. Now I'd like to invite Tony Hill to come to the podium to talk a little bit about the Australian situation. Tony has two decades of experience in linking research to commercial and other community outcomes. He established his company, Capitol Hill Consulting, in 1999. He jointly founded IPv6 Now in 2007 and has been a leader in the fostering of IPv6 adoption in Australia for the last few years. He is also chair of the Australian National ICT Industry Alliance and also the Australian IPv6 Summit Steering Committee. So we really welcome you. We really thank you for your support of this set of HUIs. It's been really great, Tony. Much appreciated.
Well, it's amazing how much has happened in the last 10 years or so. It's kind of hard to believe that all those things took place. Just a slight correction there, I was chair of the National ICT Industry Alliance from 2005 to 2007. Thankfully, I've given up that national role, which was a bit demanding, but moved on to another person. So that basically repeats who I am. Let me just say that from the point of view of IPv6 activities in Australia, we've taken a very inclusive approach and tried to collaborate wherever possible. And so wherever you see the IPv6 activities sponsored in Australia, you'll see this kind of joint branding exercise between the organisation that I'm president of, which is the Internet Society of Australia, a chapter of the Worldwide Internet Society, and we've linked up very closely with the IPv6 Forum Worldwide through the forum down under their Australian chapter. And so those two groups typically work hand in glove to make things happen in Australia and work closely together. And I work very closely with Mike Biber on a lot of these activities. That's been enormously helpful. And let me just add, and I'm not sure if this has been given in Vint's bio yet today, so I'll add a little bit, but I think, Vint, you're the honorary chair of the IPv6 Forum Worldwide. Is that the right term to use? So that's an organization that is designated by the Internet Engineering Task Force as the promotion and coordination group for IPv6 Worldwide. So we started to take a look at IPv6 way back in 2000, and we'd been keeping a bit of an eye on issues related to it over the years. But really 2004, 2005 is when we started to get quite serious about the discussions in Australia on this front. And invariably the first question I was asked was, why should Australia take an interest in this, to what was many people an unpronounceable acronym? And the answer to that was quite simple. When you look around the list of countries that were taking an interest in IPv6 around the world, you saw some very important issues coming forward from Australia's point of view. So just to run through that list as we had it pitched, Japan had been taking an interest in IPv6 since about 2000, including paying customers by 2005, and also on the road to getting there, a number of prime ministerial endorsements of why they should be taking up IPv6. South Korea always seems to get their timing right, but they'd been travelling under a plan that had full civilian implementation of IPv6 occurring in 2010. I'll just remind you that that's next year. China has taken a serious interest in this, and Vince already told you about their research and education network activities, which is very strong. But if you want to see a kind of more civilian orientation on that, you might want to check out the Beijing Olympics website, which I think is still operating. And down the bottom of that, you'll find a small link which says IPv6. You click on that link, and a screen comes up to give you a warning. And it says, you are now leaving the IPv4 version site here and heading for the IPv6 version site. The warning is the content is exactly the same. And you kind of go, well, you know, why would you do that? But the key point is that they wanted to do that because they have got IPv6 users who want to access that material. And, of course, under the dual stack arrangements, if you happen to have an IPv6-only network, you will not be able to see the existence of the IPv4 version of that website, you'll only be able to see the existence of the IPv6 version. So China was definitely progressing these issues. The USA is quite interesting because they started off with a government mandate to move forward on IPv6, and that arose in the Defense Department in the US, and I'll talk a little bit more about how they got to that position in a minute, but it basically worked its way through from defense to the whole of the US government, and so they had a mandate that US government backbone networks should be IPv6 enabled around about the middle of 2008. And all the reports that I've seen is that that goal was largely achieved. Setting that goal had a catalyzing influence on the US industry. And so whereas prior to that, you probably saw a couple of providers who are leading the way in providing IPv6 capability and connectivity, after that goal you saw a raft of people who were able to claim that. The question, of course, arose as to what the quality or what the detail of that delivery was. And so some people may have been just using it as a kind of checkbox criteria. If you move to Europe, I was there in the middle of last year and attending their IPv6 day in Brussels when they announced the objective of having 25% of European internet users using IPv6 by, wait for it, 2010. There's that year again. So definitely we saw a world moving forward. From the point of view of my personal travels, I guess India was kind of the exception. And when I was there about 18 months ago, I didn't find a preponderance of IPv6 being available or moving forward. And I found that kind of puzzling because from the outside, India looks like a no-brainer for IPv6 implementation in the way that China is. Huge population, lots of people want to go on the net. Where's the IPv6? But certainly when I was there talking to ISPs and so forth, they were giving that sort of standard answer. Well, where's the money? How am I going to make something out of this? How are we going to move forward? So really, to short answer the question, why is this important for Australia? When we looked through that list of countries, what we found was the top group of Australia's trading and strategic partners all moving in this direction. And that's the part of the story that really keeps me awake at night, because when we think about the huge amounts of exports and income for the Australian economy, if we found ourselves in a situation where our exporters were not capable of talking the same electronic language as our major trading strategic partners, we would have a real problem. And so that's why I took that argument and put it in front of, wait for it, not the government, but in front of industry in the form of the National ICT Industry Alliance. And so at the beginning of 2005, that grouping included probably 20 to 25 of Australia's leading ICT industry groups, and I put that argument in front of them in what's really been their only unanimous act. They said, yes, we should have a national discussion of IPv6. And out of that, a collaborative approach was born to creating the Australian IPv6 Summit. So this year we're up to summit number 5, and we've spent some time to give people awareness of the issue and also give them a chance to debate some of the issues. The summit wouldn't have been born, and in fact a lot of our processes wouldn't have got up to such a good start without support from the Australian government around about 2005. So they gave us a bit of financial support to get the summit going, and they also funded an interesting project called IPv6 for e-business. And at that point, we were able to assemble a whole range of information for businesses who wanted to move forward into the IPv6 space. And that website, which the URL comes up on the next slide, will give you still quite a range of basic information guiding you through the process, skills development, but also some of the more technical information. So there's a whole collection of relevant RFCs if you want to delve into the technical specs of IPv6. We coordinated all of this activity through a special interest group established in ISOC AU, shortly after those two things we established an Oz technical email list, and I think you've now got a similar function in Australia to allow the technical community to share queries and questions about that. It hasn't been a terribly high volume list, but when comments and questions do come up on that list, they get answered by the most amazing people.
Tony, would you help me with Victorian government, which sounds 19th century? What's going
We actually have states in Australia.
And sounds like the state of denial.
And one of those...
That's the state of Victoria, not the Victorian government.
As in Queen Victoria, no. We didn't start that early on IPv6. I'm sorry, Vin. So you'll see a fair bit of government activity in amongst the lead sectors there, and I should give credit to RNET in particular, our academic and research network, who really have been working very solidly and developed a considerable amount of expertise on IPv6 since about 2001. Australian Defence has taken an interest, probably because their US colleagues started to take a strong interest, and we've got some interesting developments on the general government front. As Vin pointed out, then some of the interest is also starting to come through at the state government level, and we've now got a number of state governments who are developing their own IPv6 transition plans. But I guess the state of Victoria, not the Victorian Queen government, has been taking a special interest in industry adoption and the benefits of IPv6 for industry, and so they've commissioned a couple of projects in that area, and I'll talk a bit about them. And of course our National ICT Industry Alliance got involved. So effectively what we did was to say, we've taken this message and this discussion to industry. Industry thinks that this is a really important issue. And then we were able to go back to government and say, look what industry is saying to you about IPv6. Now can you guys play your role in this? In a lot of countries around the world, and I include the US in this, which is quite interesting, the process started off much more from a government mandate sort of perspective. You know, you can argue the pluses and minuses of that, but I guess you'd have to say that government often has a role to foster the community to get interested in things that are of collective interest, but not necessarily of you know, single personal interest, and not necessarily driven by a direct profit motive straight off. So we kind of took... You know, that government mandate process would not work in Australia. We understood that, and so we went to industry first, and then governments come in and played their role in the scheme of things. How we move forward from here in the context, particularly of a debate in Australia about the national broadband network, which is going to give every premises, I would think, at least covering 90% of the population, about 100 megs through fibre to the premises, that's going to be an interesting debate and one that we want to keep up with the Australian government very much. So here's a couple of the kind of reference information. That website that I was talking about, ipv6.org.au, is completely publicly available, so you can access that and get a good guide on IPv6 from there. There's also some downloadable information available from that site, including a spreadsheet that we put together as a return on investment calculator. Now, when you read some of the documentation and a few of the books that Tony Hain had up on the last slide of his presentation, I think, you'll find that IPv6 implementations have considerable cost-saving benefits as greenfield installations. If you're looking at a large network, then that's definitely the place to go for cost savings. If you want to move through a kind of transition process from your current network, IPv4-based network, into an IPv6 world, you'll probably go through some sort of minor cost hump, depending on how you approach the issue. But if you want to identify where the cost savings are going to occur coming out of that hump, then you can use that tool to assess what areas are going to produce cost savings for you in your network. It's styled against various sorts of organisations, and you can download it and test it off that website. We're still very interested in comments on that approach, by the way. Our next IPv6 summit is coming up 7th to 9th of December, and we've taken a leaf out of the book that every politician seems to know at the moment, which is that there's some sort of global financial crisis, and therefore the theme of our IPv6 summit this year is IPv6, the bottom line. So where are we getting these benefits and cost savings out of networks is going to be interesting. And we've got some worked examples in Australia that we'll bring forward to that. There's that Victorian government again. But just to mention that by the time we got to... So remember, we kind of seriously got into the debate about 2005. By the time we got to 2007, it became really clear that there were going to be some commercial dimensions to this. So for years and years, plenty of people had been sitting around in rooms. Hey, we're in a room. And they'd been sitting there talking about IPv6 pretty much as we're doing today. But invariably what people started to say, well, where are those worked examples? Where's the practical experience of this? And where can we get our skills from? So that was really the rationale that caused me to get together with another five people, including Kevin Karp, who's in the room, to found IPv6 now and say, we can actually provide you with the commercial services that you may need to bring IPv6 together. You might understand that we formed the name by putting the acronym and the word NOW together. People also wanted to know, well, okay, you can pull IPv4 addresses out of a network and plug IPv6 addresses in there, and pretty much there's been enough demonstration to say that that all works fine. But a lot of people say, well, what's the point in that? Because you still get the same set of services that are available. So people wanted to know about potential additional applications. For what it's worth, that's kind of a rough list of our assessment of where things are going to happen here. Certainly, Vince given you a very good example of how the sensor networks thing is going to hang together. But all sorts of things are going to be pinned off what is effectively a huge internet compared to the current internet. And I think it's worth getting your mind around just how large those numbers are. We've just been working on some internal examples of this, and we're always looking for good kind of ways of conceiving this. I think Vince moved away from a website for every atom in the universe because someone figured out that that was orders of magnitude slightly off.
50 orders of magnitude more electrons than there is just space.
Map a square representing the IPv4 address space into one pixel, and you're able to get a printer that printed at 300 dots per inch standard printing thing, then in order to get a square that would fit the IPv6 address space, I think you'd need a piece of paper that was, on one dimension, at least 23 million kilometres. It's a huge space. You've heard a lot about this sort of stuff, but the discussion in Australia is very similar. We need to build our skills. We need to get organisations into transition planning. From the Australian point of view, there's an enormous push at the moment to rebuild and revitalise Australian infrastructure, and so we've been making the case back to the Australian government that whenever they think of doing that, they need to consider building IPv6 into that structure. And I'm not just talking about fast networks around the country, I'm talking about all sorts of infrastructure, bridges, roads, ports, the whole thing. And needless to say, we need some supportive government policies behind all this. One thing that does bemuse me is that the internet often comes second in these debates, and so there's a nice allocation of about $39 million to help the country move from analog to digital TV. We're actually going to switch off analog TV before too long, and you're only going to get digital. The allocation behind that was about $39 million. I wouldn't mind having a small share of that for the IPv6 transition if we can get it. So where are we going? I've talked about the ARNET story. Certainly the National ICT Industry Alliance and the Australian IPv6 Summit continue to play a strong role here. Just to give you a bit more detail on the government front, the defence story is really interesting here. That TIPSTEEL acronym I've got there is the defence testbed network that they use for planning operations and so forth. It's generally not accessible from industry or from outside defence, so it's not something that you can rock up and use. But they have been very helpful in talking to us about their approaches. But if you take defence back to when that original mandate occurred in 2003, it didn't arrive because some boffin or some technical expert in defence went, oh, you really ought to do IPv6. It arose because they went through a very careful planning and analysis process. What they were doing at that time was assessing the overall needs, and particularly the information needs, of their operation for about 20 to 30 years into the future. And they said, what are we hoping to do over this period? And Defence had had some success in getting smarter, more capable systems into their environment. But they bought those systems, as you might expect, as Defence-rated systems, and consequently they paid a price premium for that. And so the pricing of some Defence systems is legendary these days. but also the systems that they bought tended to exist in stovepipes. And so literally, they often had to have people carting information from one system and plugging into another. So as part of this analysis process, they discovered kind of two terms that were really important to the way in which they planned the future. The first one was, we're not going to have this stovepipe arrangement anymore, we're going to move to an interoperable environment. And secondly, if we can buy stuff that's useful for us off the shelf, we'll try and do that. And so they discovered the acronym COTS, Common Off-the-Shelf Technologies. Now, once they discovered those two words, there was really only one direction they could go after that. They could only end up at internet technology because internet technology satisfies both of those requirements. And when they did that, they had a look at IPv4 and said, 20 to 30 years into the future, it's not going to do the job for us. We've got to go with IPv6. I regard that as the right analysis process. That's the right way to go about thinking about this problem. And it's the sort of process that everybody, each organisation needs to do on their own. As Tony said, though, we're running out of time for you to go through all that intellectual work, and remember that they started that back around 2000. So it may be a little rushed, but you're still going to have to make your own decisions about this. There's another acronym on this slide that you may not understand, which is the Australian Government Information Management Office. They are the coordinators of ICT strategy for the Australian Government. And come 2005, they started working on understanding IPv6 and analysing that situation. And towards the end of 2006, they actually came out with a transition strategy for the whole of the Australian Government to move towards IPv6. That was a very ambitious achievement, particularly in the context in which it was born. And we only had one bone to pick with them, that the end point of that transition strategy was 2015. And we went, we know what those graphs are going to do. We know what the address space is going to look like. We think that process is a little bit slow. It wasn't always a friendly discussion around this topic, but I'm pleased to say that as of yesterday, they've announced a revision to the plan and brought that end date forward by, wait for it, 3 years. So they've made an enormous advance here, and not only have they brought the end date forward, they've also introduced a very strong, what looks like a very strong monitoring process to make sure that agencies actually keep up with this timetable. So you can expect a fair bit of action in the government sector in Australia as a result of that transition plan. As I said, it was unusual from the point of view of government policy, because a lot of governments around the world were talking about plans for the overall economy, or they were thinking of backbone networks in their own environment. So the Australian government approach was kind of unusual. And as a result of that, because they wanted to shift the whole Australian government operations across and make it available on IPv6, and that was a unique approach, now it's starting to be copied by other governments around the world, and I think Canada might be the first one to do that. The Victorian government, so-called, is also very active in this area, and they've provided a couple of things to analyse the impact of IPv6 on Victorian industry and Victorian industry prospects. And one of the things that they've funded is this testbed network. I should emphasise, it's not a testbed network to understand whether IPv6 works or it doesn't work. That's not the situation being tested here. What's being tested is, can I bring my systems, existing systems or new systems, to this network and test out whether they're going to work in an IPv6 environment? And so this is a very unusual sort of project in the Australian scheme of things, a situation where any company can come free from Victoria because the Victorian taxpayers paid for it and use a network in order to test out systems. So if you're thinking about a new installation or whatever, you can bring your planned installation into the testbed environment, test it out with traffic generators and so forth, and make sure you're happy with the configuration and the performance of that system before you load it back into your production network. So that's been a unique development, and we've been establishing it with a number of priority sectors, including health, financial services and automotive manufacturing, in order to get some of the industry interest to happen. The Victorian government said to us, it's not enough for you guys to have a bit of a feast of technology interest in this project. The main focus of this exercise has to be industry outreach, and you have to find a strong partner to help you with that process. So we've been working with a group called Australian Industry Group, They have an industry membership of about 12,000 members around Australia across a range of sectors, but particularly manufacturing. And so we've been jointly working with them, and IPv6 now has been commissioned to build and operate that network. And we also help out with some of the industry outreach stuff. So what's IPv6 now about? Just to give you a bit of explanation on that. Effectively, we saw a need, because everybody was asking us this question, what does IPv6 mean to my organisation? Why should I take an interest in it? So we decided to put together a range of skills that anybody could use in order to move IPv6 forward. And as I said before, we put the word now together with IPv6 in order to create the impression that you didn't have to wait. And this is a key point, because a lot of the presentations that you'll hear during the day today all talk about how you prepare your core network and move forward to IPv6. In fact, the infrastructure that we've invested in means that you don't have to move any network infrastructure forward into the IPv6 world in order to use the IPv6 internet. And this may be very helpful to you in terms of exploring stuff. So, for instance, I use our technology day in, day out, except here where I've got a native IPv6 connection, but I could probably even use it here, in order to access our IPv6-only services from anywhere I happen to be on the planet. And that's been standing up very well. Underlying that technology is a tunnel provision service. So effectively, we're tunneling IPv6 over through, whatever your term is, the IPv4 internet. But it's been a very reliable service, and we've actually used that as well to allow people to have remote access to the VIC-6 network in that environment. So that's one example of the things that we're doing. If you look at the website, you'll find a whole range of stuff that we've managed to put together for IPv6 now, and I think that probably brings me to the end of the whole exercise. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much indeed, Tony. We probably don't have time for questions right now, but we will have Tony available later on in the day, so keep your questions for that as well. So I hope you're getting a long list of those questions for later on in the day.